I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, do you know what this is, Ruth?
What is this, Dad?
This is the bit where we test the levels. I got an email from somebody called Martin Leo. He's headlined it, the bit where we test the levels. He says, this week's episode has just reinforced my theory that Martin is constitutionally incapable of recording a whole episode without explicitly mentioning at least one format point. It used to be, I'm now going to play our musical sting. Now it's, we're going to tell some jokes while we test the levels. If you, this was addressed to you, Ruthie. He says, if you convinced him not to do that, he'd just do something else. You forget
it's
it. Let him do it, he says, because otherwise he'd just be saying, this is the part of the show where Ruthie offers an impassioned defence of why Friends is the best comedy. Or this is the part of the show where I tenuously link some musical history to the Beatles. Just let him get over it at the start of the show.
That might be the funniest email we've ever had.
Oh, well, there you go, Martin Leo. He says, anyway, I'll add my voice to those hoping that the podcast continues once uni starts. I'm sure it will in some way. So, this is the bit where we test the levels and...
What was that bit just before?
That was the bit where we talk about the fact that we're saying that this is the bit where we test the levels.
Right, okay.
So, here we go.
So, what was that bit then?
That bit was the bit where we explained that the bit before was the bit where I was testing the levels. Now, this is the bit where we start. Because this is a generation gap podcast, if you like, and one of the things that my generation finds the hardest thing to come to terms with these days, some of these arguments about transgender. In Scotland, they had plans to allow people to self-declare their legal gender, right? They've shelved these plans, which seems to me to be entirely sensible. Because there seems to be two arguments about this. The feminist argument is if you let people... The trans argument is you should be allowed to self-declare your gender. The feminist argument is, and I find myself totally on the side of the feminists here, is...
Although, I think it's important to say that feminists and peer trans activists don't have to be entirely separate. Like, I think that feminists should be working to involve trans women in feminism. I think that's one of the problems with radical feminists is that they get too hung up on sort of separating between radical feminists and left feminists and trans activists, and like we should all be feminists and just be fighting for the same thing.
And should feminists allow men to say, I'm now a woman, before they've had any operation, before they've had any treatment.
So it takes... if you watched the... There was a programme about trans women in sport with Martina Navratilova.
Yeah, I watched it.
The thingy, yeah. Do you remember...
To me, she's 100% right.
Well, I think it's... But the programme showed that it's just way more complicated than that. Like, the Cheltenham Football Club, which is the only professional... It's the only professional LGBT team, I think, like... LGBT football team.
Wasn't our team at Crystal Palace?
I thought it was Cheltenham.
Charlton.
It's
Charlton Athletic.
Similar, most of the same letters. Anyway, and so the woman they spoke to there, who was a trans woman, she was talking about how it takes 2 years just to get an appointment for an operation, just for an appointment, like, and to live in someone else's body for that long and not be able to even declare that you're not the assigned gender at birth.
Well, nobody's saying
that's completely unfair. But what I'm saying is that you turn it into a thing, a man can just declare that they're a woman, and it sounds very Piers Morgan-y. because that is not the story. Well, for most of the people who will declare a different gender to the one assigned the birth, that's not their story.
Well, there's an old Croatian proverb that says, even the blind hen will occasionally peck a grain, right? So what it means is, yeah, even Piers Morgan will occasionally be right. And in this sense, he's right, and Martina Navratilova is right. And in Scotland, they're right, because I'll tell you what's happened here. The original proposals were that anyone over 16 would be allowed to change gender on the same day or after a brief waiting period just by signing a declaration. Scots ministers had said they believed the current law, which demands that applicants seek a doctor's diagnosis and live in their new gender for 2 years, to be intrusive.
So long,
it's a tough business.
It's testing you. Someone doesn't come out as gay and you're like, right, so I want you to get married to a man for 2 years.
It's a difference between gay. Well,
but there's not really. It's just feeling a way that's not the norm. Like, and also, I don't see what's the problem of declaring that you're not the gender that was assigned to you at birth, because it's not a case of just going, oh, I'm actually a woman. Like, you understand that it's much more complicated than that.
I do understand it's much more complicated, but let me just quote what the opponents of this say. They said the proposals put women at risk by giving male-bodied people access to changing rooms, women's prisons, rape crisis centres and other protected areas. It just seems to me that common sense declares,
I understand that.
Common sense declares that you shouldn't allow male-bodied people to use...
No, but that would be a minority of... That would be a tiny, tiny minority of people who would take advantage of a system. For the vast majority of people, it would be a really great thing. And, like, I don't think we're suggesting that men can just go, oh, I'm a woman, and step into a women's changing room.
If you're genuinely
a trans woman, I don't care about sharing a changing room or a bathroom with you at all. If you identify as a woman, and also you've got to believe that people are inherently good and people aren't going to take advantage like that. How many men do you actually believe would do that?
I believe it would be very small. It'd be a minority.
And imagine how many trans people you would be helping.
Well, I don't see that. It's a tough business to be. I actually have a trans friend, as you know. I know how important it was to transition. So I recognise that. You know, I recognise that it's not a decision you take lightly. It's not a decision you take lightly.
But that's what I'm saying. If it takes 2 years to get an appointment, then you have to, even if you're dressing like a woman and you feel like a woman, you just have to continue to go to men's changing rooms. How is that not just as difficult, and if not more? Like, if you, and also you know, if someone's fully identifies as a man and is just using this system, which I just don't think people would do.
But can you understand?
I think you're building a problem that's not even there. Men as it is now don't really walk into women's changing rooms. I don't think they would start doing it once they can go, oh, I identify as a woman. I don't think it would happen. So then all the problem is that you don't believe that trans women are real women.
What annoys me to some extent, for instance, I'll tell you, there's Joan McAlpine, who is an MSP, a member of the Scottish Parliament, right? She played a prominent part in the revolt. So she, you know, she says we should shelve this, we shouldn't do this,
yeah.
We shouldn't allow people just to say they're a woman and then use women's changing rooms and all that stuff. And she got an avalanche of abuse from trans activists and everything, as indeed Martina Navratilova got when she said they shouldn't be allowed to participate in women's sport.
That is a different argument there.
Different argument, but the same effect is that people who say, I don't think this is right, get a load of abuse from trans... It's trans activists, I suppose, that I'm annoyed about, that they don't understand that people of a different generation, for instance, might find this all a little bit difficult to stomach. And people ought to be allowed to have a point of view and not to be shouted down and tweeted down by trans activists at every point. And when you saw Martina Navratilova in that programme, you realised that she wasn't doing it from...
No, well, that's... I think the Martina Navratilova, I think people were massively unfair to her because it is a much more it's actually a more complicated issue than is in there, because it's a thing of science, and you want sport to be fair, and you don't want women to become disadvantaged, and you also want trans women to have a place in the sporting world, and like it is just so complicated. And if you watch the programme, there was no solution was ever going to be reached in it. It's just too, just too difficult. Like that, whatever way you go with it, someone's going to be upset and unhappy, and like you don't know it. And I think that Martina Navratilova did face too much abuse, but I also think that an older generation can't just say, you know, it's very difficult to stomach. Like there should be. They should be actively trying to understand another viewpoint, which is, I think, what goes wrong. Like Piers Morgan doesn't listen.
Should trans activists also accept that it's a complicated issue, and they shouldn't be just abusing someone straight away?
I can't imagine a trans activist who doesn't think that transgender issues are not complicated.
So
and
why
complex.
Do they just leap in on Twitter? Anybody who says anything,
and not smart ones don't.
But they all do, though, don't they?
I've not seen it.
Well, all right. In that case, it's wrong. When Joe McAlpine, they've let
No one should face abuse for what they're saying. If you believe, like, I think you can disagree with someone without it becoming abusive. But that is also the nature of having a public platform, unfortunately. And what she was saying was, in a way, controversial for some. Like, I think you know before you say something if it's going to get backlash. You can disagree with someone without it becoming, you're not allowed to say that. But also, I don't believe in this phony idea of free speech that suddenly people are obsessed with. Actual free speech doesn't mean you can say whatever you want to say. I just cannot see in my head a man going to one of these offices and declaring they're a woman so they can go in women's changing rooms and perv on women.
Could happen, though.
Of course it could happen. It's one of those arguments that turns this tiny what if to avoid letting people do something that would help them.
There was another story in the trans world. Almost 3/4 of children seeking help to change their gender are girls, apparently the highest proportion recorded, according to figures from England's only child gender clinic. The director of the clinic says we continue to see a much higher proportion of assigned females at birth referred to the service. We're alive to this issue and are exploring it. So they're presumably, when they say they're exploring the issue, they think there's maybe too many.
Right.
Yeah. So let me try and connect this with Mallory Towers. You're a big fan of Mallory Towers.
Yeah.
Enid Blyton. Don't you look so aggressive?
I'm just sceptical.
Well, Mallory Towers, there's a character in Mallory Towers called Bill, apparently. I don't remember that. But Bill is what Enid Blyton used to call a tomboy. And there were lots of...
I kind of remember, yeah.
Yeah, there's always a tomboy in an Enid Blyton book. It was George in the Famous Five. There's a girl called George in that. And do you think possibly there's too much... And this may be parents as well. There's too much sort of leaping. You know, years ago, a tomboy would be a tomboy. But do you think that these days the concept of being a tomboy...
The concept of being a tomboy is stupid.
Why is it stupid?
To have to categorise a woman who's not into, like, typical femininity into something different is just, in general, stupid.
But it served for years and years. It was
in a world that decided that women were one way and men were one way, and anything that differed from the norm was needed to be in a separate category.
Well, yes, in a separate category, but they might...
I just don't believe in tomboys.
Is it possible that it's a phase that you don't actually have to change gender?
No, of course. Like, it's also one of those things where it's like...
Is it possible that at some point people are leaping to conclusions about their gender?
I think that is true, but I also don't know enough about it. I would need to talk to lots of trans children and lots of trans parents of trans children. Like, you would need to do tons and tons of research. If you've seen the Louis Theroux documentary on trans children, it's one of the things that he covers, and like, it is difficult. But the concept of tomboys is just silly.
Well, here's something that's not quite so controversial.
Good.
And that is...
I'm exhausted.
That is the North-South divide.
Yay.
The Pacer trains...
People do not like when we talk... Well, when mostly me talk not highly of London.
London was hideous at the weekend because it was so hot.
No, but people don't like... In the emails and the thing, like, oh, very liberal on everything, but hates London. What is this about hating London? People really don't like it.
This is not so much London.
I don't hate London.
No. This is the North-South divide. And the Pacer train is still running. There's a picture of it. in a news movie, yeah?
I know it. Been on it.
You know the train. That's the train that you get on Northern Rail. The unpopular trains, which people call buses on rails, people wouldn't believe it in the south of England that we're still travelling around on this in the north.
Got one of those every day to school for about a year and a half.
Well, these unpopular trains look set to screech and trundle into 2020. They should have gone by now. They're supposed to have gone a couple of years ago. They're just sort of noisy and uncomfortable and old-fashioned, really.
Yeah.
Andy Burnham, who is the mayor of Greater Manchester and should possibly be the leader of the Labour Party, but that's a different issue, said Pacer trains are a symbol of the chronic underinvestment in northern transport by successive governments. The fact that passengers will still have to travel in these museum pieces in 2020 is unacceptable. This fiasco, what happened was they were going to be replaced by some Spanish trains, which were...
Spanish?
There was a flaw in the Spanish trains. And
can we not just build new trains?
Well, that's what was happening in Spain. They'd bought them.
I thought they were just taking... trains that were in Spain and flying them
Northern
over.
Northern Rail invested £500 million in some trains built by a Spanish firm, but they were flawed. The fiasco once again underlines why the North needs to be at the front of the queue when it comes to investment for the next 25 years, just like London has been for the last 50 years.
Oh, last 150, maybe.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what Andy Burnham says, and I suspect you're agreeing with that.
Yeah, of course, isn't it? In every facet of life, the North is last on the list.
Boris Johnson...
Too far from London.
...says that, that he is going to make sure that the North becomes the great city like London, or northern cities become great cities like London did.
That's so offensive. You know, I don't want it to be a great city like London. I want it to be a great city. Leeds is a great city. It just needs more investment. Like, no one's suggesting that. You also don't want it to turn into London.
No. Well, it's the Leeds,
which is not a... I wouldn't even call it that great of a city.
Leeds is the biggest city in Europe without a rapid transit system.
Yay!
So
just because it doesn't have investment and stuff doesn't mean it's not a great city. I love the North. My fave.
You had a bit that you wanted to talk about.
I do.
Did you have a bit? And you said, yes, I've got a bit. So let's hear it.
There's been a global study of 10,000 people, which Snapchat have commissioned, and it's found that Britons have fewer best friends. We have 2.6 best friends on average, which I imagine you think is quite high.
2.6 best friends.
On average.
Yes, I've probably got a 0.6 that I could say. David Nichols is a 0.6 best friend.
David Nichols is Facebook friends with Dad, and he mentions it twice a day, I'd say.
No more than that.
In Saudi Arabia, participants reported 6.6 best friends on average.
In Saudi Arabia?
A lot of best friends. So it says, like, do we really need more than that? And it also, do we have less best friends now than we did? Fewer. Yeah, it does say fewer. Do we have fewer best friends because of, you know, modern technology and phones and Instagram? Does it mean we're, like, losing touch?
Yeah, probably.
Think so.
Are you?
Also, I think
Snapchat
it's weird that.
Have,
do you think that British people have less? Because British people have like the least, fewest best friends. It's really hard to use it with like in the like fewest least. But you know what I mean. I just got my head around fewer. Do we have fewer? No, what?
We have the fewest best. Actually, it doesn't really work, does it?
The fewest best friends.
The least best friends.
Yeah, but you can't. But that's less.
Would there be least best? In other words, they'd be friends, but they'd be the least best friends. They'd be friends, but not quite as best as Saudi Arabian
friends. No, so we have the fewest best friends in a lot of countries. Do you think it's a British thing?
Do you know,
Declaring that you have fewer best friends because you don't want to be like, we don't like to be like, we're friends in Britain, do we? We like to just make sarcastic comments at each other until
we hang out
a lot.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's to do with the fact that working lives in the UK are very stressed.
We work so much. We work so many more hours than in Italy and Spain.
And also, you know, if you look at London and the commuting and all that, and how long, you know, because nobody can afford to live right in the centre of London. So, you know, you're commuting and maybe a train and then an underground. You know, I see people in London at 8 o'clock people, the trains are packed with people going home from work out to the suburbs. So I think we probably have less time for best friends. I think.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think you tend to end up just with your work colleagues all the time.
They are your friends, aren't they?
Well, they're your sort of work colleagues. They're not your sort of best friends, are they? And we spend more time with our work colleagues than we actually do with friends and things.
So husbands and wives.
Yeah, I think it's quite a plausible survey.
I don't know why it is that we work so much in the UK compared to other countries.
I mean, you're just so lucky having so many friends.
No, I never say that. But I suppose that actually while you're at school, you have way more friends and then slowly they peter off.
Oh, yeah. Because that's what happens with life, you know. There's you have loads of friends at school. You still have loads of friends in your 20s. You get married and then quite a lot of them drift off, you know, because you're married and your single friends aren't as close to you as they were before.
It's quite sad.
And then you get a little bit older and a little bit more boring, and then more friends drift. Yeah,
can vouch for that.
Yes, and then more friends drift away, and eventually you just end up sitting in a chair in a nursing home dribbling and...
Although people make friends in nursing homes.
Yeah, that's something
which is fun.
Let's do the rest of the emails. We've got a whole bunch of them this week.
Really?
Loads and loads and loads of them, so we'll do some of those.
I'm so excited.
Well, some of them aren't entirely complimentary to you.
I don't want to hear them, please. This first one
is about your racism. Yes, it's from Richard Smith. Hear him out. Richard Smith, and his headline is Anti-Scottish Agenda.
What?
He says, hello.
I don't realise I've spoken about the Scottish.
Well, here we go. Hello, Kelmers. As a Scottish listener in Scotland, I was somewhat perplexed by Ruth's incredulity that good and food could possibly rhyme.
You were more angry about that than I was.
No, you mentioned it last week. This is commonly cited by people in the south of England as being ridiculous and seems to be a form of xenophobic prejudice against Scottish accents and pronunciation of words, which obviously stretches as far north as Leeds, at least. To help enlighten me as to how people in Scotland should be pronouncing words,
it's just the fact that Co-op is not a Scottish company.
Would you get Ruthie to read each of the following? So you'd like
this
to read
isn't
those?
Fair because I was saying it was it that that's the Co-op thing, and you were like, oh, ridiculous thing.
Here you go. He wants you to read those words so that he knows how to pronounce them.
This is awful. I don't want to do this, but he pronounces them fine. It's just that Co-op is not Scottish.
Please read those words. Don't forget that Co-op.
I don't want to.
Go on.
Food, good. Hood, mood, wood.
Excellent, thank you.
I'm a big Scottish fan.
He says, other than this anti-Scottish bullying, I love the podcast. So keep up the good, he says, pronounce good work. And that's from Rich.
But I don't even... Right, so the Scottish accent would be like good, like that-ish, wouldn't it?
Sort of.
And then they would do food. Like that. Like, it doesn't quite rhyme anywhere.
No. There you go, Rich. That's telling you.
Just saying that the Co-op... It's not Scottish people who are stupid. It's the Co-op.
Okay, there you are, Rich. He says, love, Rich, age 39 and three quarters. Darren has headlined his email, Professionalism.
He says...
I can cope with Ruth's interruptions and her contrariness, but can you tell her to stop yawning, please? She said on the last pod she was a professional. He says, great podcast apart from that.
I'm not having it because you edit it, right?
Well,
you leave in all the bits where I yawn and say stupid stuff.
I let in one. The yawn last week, I kept that in because I wanted to keep in there. You like that? I'll edit that one out.
No, but it's only because if you keep talking about yawning,
if you mention the word yawn, somebody yawns.
But you edit the bits out where you sound stupid and where you will be like, I won't say it. And you edit all those bits out and bits where you cough and sneeze and yawn and all that kind of stuff.
I don't yawn.
Because you want to sound like cool and professional and slick, and then you leave all my bits in.
No, I've edited out, most weeks I edit out all your yawns, but last week I came back with a bit of a funny where I said, I'm sorry if we're keeping you up, so I thought I'd leave that one in. But anyway, Darren picks up on it. Well done, Darren. Martin Griffiths says, Martin, when you've had enough of Ruth, there'll be...
God!
He says, when you've had enough of Ruth, there'll be Harpy, me and my dad. And he sent me a picture of Bex and Harper, his daughter, at the women's football. They went to the the England match against Norway. Only sent us a little one-line joke, which we could use when I'm testing the levels. He says, I went into the butcher's today and asked him if he kept dripping. Yes, I do, and it's very embarrassing, he says.
It's better than those ones you did this morning.
Oh, really? It's very old. He says, just back from Dublin. He says, loves Ireland. And he says, in the music spot, could you play Joe Tex's song, Ain't Gonna Bump No More With No Big Fat Woman? Ruthie'll just love it. Now, Barney Edis... Has headlined his email, update from your crisp correspondent. He says, still loving the podcast, even more so now you read out my email. He said, when I shared the episode this morning via Spotify with Scarlett, my 13-year-old daughter, her text back was, OMFG. Is that good or bad, do you think? Do you think it could go either way?
Yeah, really good. Hopefully good.
Hopefully good. I've taken the liberty. And this is, do you remember I gave you that packet of crisps, the Chardonnay wine vinegar crisps from Co-op? I've taken the liberty of purchasing you both a bag of the Co-op sea salt and Chardonnay white vinegar crisps.
Aww.
I thought they came from the Co-op. They came from him. He says, I'll drop these
That's so sweet.
Yeah, and he dropped them in by hand to Talk Radio. He says, on his way home to sunny Hampshire this afternoon.
Well, thank you. They were very, it was very, very
you
kind.
You like them, don't you?
I thought they were lovely.
Still too pungent for me. He says, I'm not associated...
Pungent, the word everyone wants to use with foods.
Food. He says, I'm not associated with Co-op in any way. And to prove this, please see below link for Tesco sour cream and chive dip, which my eldest daughter, Molly, 17, enjoys with said crisps and an episode or three of Love Island, which we're coming to in a sec.
Love it.
You love it.
Well, thank you, though, because I was very...
Yeah, thank you for the crisps.
Never had anything sent. That's really exciting.
Yes, cheers. One packet of the crisps were eaten by the Talk Radio people, and then the other one I gave to you and your sister.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
She absolutely demolished them there.
I don't like them myself. Chris Best is associated with the Co-op, and we had more mail about the Co-op and the crisps than anything. You know, we can argue as much as we like about trans and about various things.
About trans.
What do we call it then?
Like, will you maybe say trans issues or something?
Trans issues, all right. Chris Best says, hi, Martin Ruth. Firstly, although I'm in my 30s, could I be one of Martin's youngest cronies? So he's a crony.
Yeah, you don't have to be old to be a crony, I don't think.
But he used to listen to me on Radio Leeds while he was on study leave for his GCSEs.
Oh, my gosh. Mm.
I guess it goes without saying, I was absolutely one of the cool kids at school. I think there might be a touch of sarcasm there. I was listening to the latest pod on the way to my day job at Co-op HQ in Manchester when you were discussing my employer. And I thought, finally, something I can contribute to. Although the divvy, you know, I was talking about the dividend and my number 17684.
Yeah, yeah.
It says, although the divvy doesn't exist as it was, if you are a member of the Co-op, you do get money back, 5%, when you buy Co-op goods in their stores. So it's more like one of those
like Club Cards,
Nectar or something, which you can either build up or spend straight away. So we're still sharing the profits in a different way. An extra percent on top of that goes to local causes of your choosing, as demonstrated in the ads that Martin is so fond of. These are the ads that are currently running in the cinema on a regular basis. Also, for Ruth, the prices could be cheaper when she goes away to uni, as Co-op is the only national food retailer that offers NUS discounts.
Yes, I have heard about this, because on student, on campus sites, a lot of the time the supermarket that they have is a Co-op, because,
you get the discount.
And if you've been to Leeds Fest last year, they had a big Co-op.
I should point out, this isn't an official Co-op press release, even though it probably reads like one. I was just excited. I had an area of expertise that I could help with. And so I'm not completely accused of brown nosing. I don't know, is that an expression you're familiar with?
Yeah, I know what brown nosing is.
I'm not the greatest fan of the "It's What We Do" line either, especially as Apple released an ad with the same tagline this week.
Wow. I'm surprised they're allowed to do that. You know, it's in the rules against that, really.
What, using a line?
Yeah, like branding, like copyright. Well, not copyright branding, but, you know, possession of intellectual property.
Good one. Well, I don't know, I suppose, unless somebody's going to actually take them to court for it.
Yes, go away with it.
Yeah, I mean, I always say about this podcast, as good today as it's always been.
Do you?
Yes, I always say that.
Do you always say that?
Or sometimes I say the podcast. You know it makes sense.
Is it time for the music?
It is. We'll have a short break and then play some music.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Start with yours this week.
Cool. Let's.
Let's. AJ Tracy.
AJ Tracy.
Well, should we play the track?
It's a song called Ladbroke Grove. No one sees myself like you do. Yo, it's the Hyperman set. AJ Tracy live and direct. DJ mash up the deck. The microphone champ is live and direct. And again, it's the Hyperman set. AJ Tracy live and direct. DJ mash up the deck. The microphone champ is live and direct. Said bubble, vibes in that. Cruise like a four-wheel drive in that. Tech time, everything's live in that. My car, AJT's on the mic in that. I said bubble. There is AJT on the mic, mashing up the decks. Really good. I enjoyed that, I have to say. He's pretty brilliant.
It's fun. Ladbroke Grove, of course, which is in Notting Hill.
He's London, from London, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he's from Ladbroke Grove in London, so makes entire sense. I didn't know whether he was actually from there, but his dad is Trinidadian. Yeah. But he's been around for ages. He was on SoundCloud in like 2011, and he's only 25 now, so... Wow. He's done the kind of legwork to be really good and stuff. And I've been listening to him for quite a while, but I've just forgotten to kind of play him. Yeah. But then there was a remix of this song that just came out. That's not the remix that we listened to that came out at the beginning of June. So it reminded me of AJ Tracy. And I thought, I'll play the actual original song. So it's a good one.
Well, I'm going to play this week the one suggested by Martin Griffiths, which I rather liked.
So not just thinking about what you actually want to play and stuff, just taking other people's ideas.
No, he's reminding me of Joe Tex. Joseph Arrington Jr. is his real name, known as Joe Tex because he comes from Texas. A bit of a story in the song is that a fat woman asked him to dance. At the time, it's 1977 we're talking about, the bump was a very famous, very popular dance where you basically bumped backsides. It was innocent times, and she bumps into him, and because she's such a big fat woman, he decides he's not going to bump anymore with any more big fat women. So this is Joe Tex, Ain't Gonna Bump No More With No Big Fat Woman. She wanted to get on down, that woman wanted to get on down. Now,
Now, you can no longer make comments about rap music and say, oh gosh, how can you like this roof if it's so misogynistic? Because that is the worst song I've ever heard.
Really. Ain't Gonna Bump No More With No Big Fat Woman from 1977. Just to prove it wasn't just fat women he was against, he had another song.
Oh, he's against all women.
No, he had another song called Skinny Legs and All. And one of the lyrics of that, as far as I remember, was, I don't want no woman with no skinny legs. So he was very prescriptive about the kind of female.
Not a massive fan. I feel like it sounded like other songs, but not as good, and the lyrics were crap.
Well, I like him. Joseph Arrington Jr., better known as Joe Tex, 1933 to 1982, so he was only 49 when he died, and he struggled. For a long time, he didn't have any hits at all.
I wonder why.
It was what they used to call Southern Soul that he did, which was a sort of mixed funk music and country music and gospel and all that. So it was all, you know, very much a Texan thing that he did. But then suddenly with those sort of novelty-ish songs, he suddenly had a hit, and that was a million seller in 1977.
My least favourite song you've ever played.
1977. He's good, though, actually. He is good. But I thought that we were playing that more for provocative reasons rather than
musical
reasons.
It's good to know what people would listen to, I guess.
But when you think of it, you know, you talk about the rap songs.
The
only difference to the rap song, you wouldn't say, I'm going to bump no more with no big fat woman. They'd say, ain't going to rock no more with no bitch or whatever. So that would be the difference. So
maybe. I don't know whether your career in rap will definitely take off, but we'll see.
Love Island.
Yes.
Well, now, there was a piece in the Sunday Times by Camilla Long. You know, I was saying, we're talking about Maura.
Camilla Long annoys me.
Has become a feminist icon, hasn't she, to some extent?
A little bit, yeah, I guess.
Well, Camilla Long says, every age gets the feminist icons it deserves, and it appears ours are the women of Love Island. Specifically Maura. Maura Higgins is a grid girl from Ireland. She combines the plastic allure of a ride-on swimming pool dolphin with the sexual frankness of a scaffolder from Hull. Now, she was together with Tom. That was the debate. Because I thought she was very, very sweary. Well, Tom is a 29-year-old dish-faced man's man from Leeds, says...
Leeds being well represented, as per usual. Yeah,
Leeds and Wakefield are always well represented on reality TV shows.
It's true, actually.
There's always someone from Leeds or Wakefield on a reality show. But anyway, Tom blew his chances because he said to his friends he'd have a chance to find out if Maura was all mouth. He said that, didn't he?
If someone said that.
Well, Maura furiously called the assignation off, telling him she'd rather stick pins in my eyes than accept his pathetic invitation for a reconciliatory chat. Anyway, the following morning she made him beg forgiveness, and she forced him to go back to her room and fetch her another hairbrush. Right. You know all that. That was the incident that we were talking about. For this, she was hailed a hero and a feminist queen on Twitter.
Yeah, but in a shallow base level sense, she's not a feminist icon of our age. A feminist icon of our age would be Caitlin Moran or Zadie Smith. Come on, like, she is feminist. That's not...
Well, let's, Camilla, make her point. But man, didn't they notice the hatred? If feminism is shrieking non-stop at men you despise before making them perform a series of awful grovelling tasks, then I suppose she is, yes, an icon. If feminism is bellowing endlessly about fanny flutters, which I have no idea what that is. We won't. And then not being able to take the slightest innuendo in return, then yeah, I suppose she is the ultimate example of brave new womanhood.
Because the whole she's missing out on what Tom said was offensive and rude and unfair.
Let me continue. Only I don't think anything about Love Island is feminist. It is a highly strung, antagonistic, lookist, fattest, sexist meat market of a horror show. So a little bit of...
Sounds like she's watched a lot of it.
She's certainly watched it, but, you know, Good column, I would say. I'm with her on that.
I think it's well written.
Yeah. Last year, the same women who now label Maura an icon were campaigning for grid girls like her to be relieved of their jobs. But in fairness to you, Ruth, you didn't. You were behind the grid girls and said they had the right to do that job.
Yeah.
Yeah, well done.
But also, yeah, but you can be feminist and be pro-ring girls, pro-grid girls, pro-porn, pro-sex work. Like, you can be that and a feminist. Do you know what I mean? I don't think that... That's the problem, is that feminism has become such an either-or situation in all its issues.
In different circumstances, she's talking about these.
But also,
people.
She can be a feminist, and Camilla Long can be a feminist. They're just feminists in different ways.
In different circumstances, they're perfectly happy to kick down on reality stars who've grown up in poor conditions, like Maura, unable to accept that for some women, programmes such as Love Island are the quickest way out of financial insecurity. So Maura isn't a feminist, no, nor would she claim she is. What she is, according to Camilla Long, is great television. So more or less, she's saying what we said.
She's great television, but I also don't believe that... I mean, Maura's not spoken about feminism, so I won't truly know. But if someone asks her, are you a feminist? And she says, yes, she is a feminist. There's no... You shouldn't have to meet a list of requirements
can I be
to
feminist?
Be one. Of course, yeah, obviously.
This is what a feminist looks like.
But well, that's the whole point of that, is that it has no look. And it also shouldn't be a let's meet the requirements of it, because the only people who have ever told women that the reason feminism exists is because men told women they had to be a certain way. And if women start doing that to each other, then what's the point anymore?
Just talk a little bit about Glastonbury. Are you familiar with the work of Black Midi?
No, I'm not, actually.
Well, they were a big success at Glastonbury. They're four recent graduates of the Performing Arts Comprehensive, the Brit School.
Oh, yeah. Everyone went to the Brit School.
Where's the Brit School? What is it?
London. Jessie J went there.
Oh, right.
Just, like loads and loads of really famous people. And everyone who's, like, from London and wants to go into singing or performing arts or anything all want to go to, like, the Brit School.
All right. Well, these are four recent graduates of the Brit School. Black Midi, listen to this, found the missing link between freeform jazz, hardcore punk, and borderline psychopathic energy.
I did not know there was a link.
No, well, all my life I've been waiting for the link between freeform jazz, hardcore punk, and borderline psychopathic energy. They have a track called Boom, 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 and it's spelled cap B, lowercase m, B, M again, and B, M again. So it's just called Boom, 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 the track. It features their singer, Geordie Greep. And I'm guessing Geordie Greep, probably not his baptismal name. But anyway, Geordie Greep squeaking, "She moves with a purpose," over a metronomic rhythm, mixed with a recording of a Big Brother contestant shouting something about cornflakes.
Sounds good.
Also there was Billie Eilish.
No!
Billie Eilish.
Eilish.
Well, she's an interesting story. You were reading the feature on her in the
Times
magazine.
Actually.
It's interesting because you were talking about friends earlier on. She says she only has one or two friends left and relies upon a therapist as the only person I can talk to. She's rather sad.
That's really sad.
The American...
I've watched her in interviews and she does seem sad. But her music is really sad as well.
The American pop singer, still only 17, says she used to be as popular as hell with at least 15 truly close friends. But global stardom has changed her life to such an extent she needs a security team to go anywhere in public. People don't like my job. I can't tell anyone about it because either it sounds like I'm bragging or it sounds like I'm being ungrateful. I've started going to therapy because it's the only person I can talk to. Do you have...
I do.
Go ahead.
How did "the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog" become the typical sentence that contains all letters of the alphabet, and not "sphinx of black quartz, judge my vow," which is objectively a million times cooler?
Very good. It goes back to the typewriter things. I think it was probably the way the keys are on the typewriter.
Really?
If ever you were doing...
Go to your laptop, Dad.
Here we go. Quick brown.
I don't think particularly.
No, maybe you're right, but that was always the sentence that you...
That you'd practice.
That you'd practice typing on.
But also when you were learning the alphabet, it was an easy... Well, not learning the alphabet, but it was one of the things you just learned, a quick brown fox. But, yeah, sphinx of black quartz, judge my vow. Sphinx of black quartz, judge my vow. It is cooler.
It's undoubtedly cooler, but it doesn't make as much sense, does it, really? Sphinx of black...
You keep saying Sphinx like squinks.
Well, it's because there used to be an ink called Quink years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In fact, the slogan for that was, for ink, get Quink.
No, it was not.
It was. For
my
ink,
gosh.
Get Quink.
The olden days, eh?
Yep, the olden days. If you want to get in touch with us, because we did get loads of emails last week and we like getting them, and the more stuff that you do, the less that we have to do, you can send us an email. It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. That's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you want to listen to the songs from this week in full and all the others, then you can go over to Spotify and just type in Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, Me and My Dad, and you'll find the playlist.
And I'm sure you'd love to listen to the Ain't No...
I'm upset that I have to add it to the playlist.
Ain't gonna bump no more with no big
upset.
Fat woman.
See you next week. Oh no! I've saved the day.
Well done, you have saved the day. But we ought to say we won't see you next week.
Or the week after.
Or the week after, because Ruthie's off.
I'm on holiday.
With her chums. So,
we'll see
back
you
in about a fortnight's time, yeah.
2 weeks' time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.